Hey, it's me, Rashawn Ali, back with you for another edition of the Cool Sora Podcast. Hopefully you have been having a fabulous day. We need for you to make us more fabulous by liking our Facebook page, following us on Instagram, and all of that good stuff. Yes, we need you to follow us. And if you would like more information on how you could be a guest, make sure you email us at cool@coolsoror.com. All right, we've got t-shirts just for you. We've got journals. We're going to roll that out by year. So Alpha Kappa Alpha is first. That are in stock. So more information and details coming up about that. All righty. And make sure you leave us a 5-star review. We need reviews, reviews, reviews. I've not been able to do the review of the week because I need more reviews. And those reviews will come from you. Okay. Today we are joined by Dr. Joy Beckwith. She is a Cool Sora of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. She's a clinical psychologist. She's a motivational speaker. She's a columnist for O Magazine. And you can hear her every Tuesday night with Darlene McCoy on Praise 102.5 locally. And that's also a syndicated show. So she is heard all across the country. All right. And you can follow her at Ask Dr. Joy. She's going to talk all about that and her journey becoming Dr. Joy Beckwith and being able to be used as a vessel for so many of her clients and so many other people. All right. So here is Power of Thought with Dr. Joy. Enjoy. You know you got to be a cool soror to talk to the cool soror herself.
I'm a cool soror.
Hey, y'all.
I am a cool soror of...
What's up, y'all? I'm a cool soror of...
Hi, I am a cool soror of...
It's the Cool Soror Podcast, hosted by me, Rashawn Ali. And we are back with another edition of the Cool Soror Podcast. And this lady and I, we've been trying to link this up for quite some time. She's busy. I'm busy. We're all busy, but... when it comes to making sure our listeners get what they need to get, I think today is one of those days. Dr. Joy Beckwith joins us, also known as Dr. Joy. And Dr. Joy, you are a cool soror of...
Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I am so well.
Yes.
So well.
Yes. This is good. This is good. You are so many things. TV, radio personality, speaker, author, professional, professor, licensed clinical psychologist. I mean, you do it all.
I do a lot.
Yes.
I do a lot. Not all at the same time.
Right.
No, that's the key. But right. I do a lot. And I love it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like work, so it's good.
You were born to help people. Do you believe that?
I absolutely do believe it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you hear when you're younger, like if you do what you love, it never feels like work. I've been doing this for such a long time. You know, of course, not like licensed for a long time, but, you know, younger growing up, this is what I was born to do. And it really does not feel like work. I love what I do.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it.
And you're just coming off of a huge conference. Was it a big conference or one of your smaller conferences?
It was a big conference. It was like, you know, 150 to 200 people.
Oh, okay.
So it was, I mean, I guess... you know, it's not thousands,
but
it was definitely,
it's all good. You changed lives.
Oh,
you hope,
my
right?
gosh. And it was wonderful. I left overflowing. So it was good. I loved it.
It was the heart to heart. So how many of these conferences do you put on a year?
So I try and do like 3 a year. I space them out. So, and it varies according to, you know, a professional conference versus a church conference and then my own conference that I put on. So I try and do 2 or 3 a year.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I want to do women's. I do a couple conferences a year too. So that's my thing.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So let's go all the way back to Thomasville, Georgia.
Ooh.
As a little girl.
Thomasville, Georgia.
How did you know, when people say you're going to major in, did you major in psychology?
So I was a double major.
Double major,
so I was a psychology and biology major.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know what I mean, college for me, I just knew that I wanted to go to college or that I had to go to college. I knew where I wanted to go to college thanks to A Different World.
Uh-huh.
And so it wasn't until I got to Spelman that I, you know, kind of played around a little bit. I'm like, do I want to do biology? Do I want to do psychology? So I don't think I went into college kind of knowing. I just, you know, I knew I had to go to college and to leave Thomasville. And once I got there, I was like, I'll figure the rest out once I get there.
Yeah, yeah. So Spelman, was it your first choice?
Oh my gosh, was it?
Yes.
A Different World, that's how I was like, I am going there. And my family, we didn't have money to, my parents were like, okay, you know, you're going to go there, but you have to figure out how you're going to go there. And I was so determined. I went for a weekend, A Day in Your Life at Spelman.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there and I was like, I want to be here. And I need to, and I think that's what changed my whole, like my whole life from that moment on. When I came back, I was like making grades, making connections, every single scholarship. I mean, it was probably a scholarship for women who wore glasses. I was like, yes, that is for me. Yeah. I mean, I was determined to
go
there.
So you found a way to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
What did you, get all of the resources to pay your way through
college? So my first year was completely paid from scholarships, but I knew this, Rashawn, I knew that once I got there, if I had that opportunity, that I could make sure that I was able to stay there. And that's what I did. I worked once I got there, that year was paid for, and then I applied for other scholarships. I did not pay for Spelman. I made sure I had a number of volunteer scholarships, a number of academic scholarships. I didn't pay for it, but I didn't have an option. I'm like, if I'm going to stay here, I need to make sure that I find a way.
What was it that you experienced when you came in the day in the life of a Spelman woman? What was it that resonated with you immediately that you knew you needed to be there?
I think sisterhood.
Yeah.
I think sisterhood. And I think women just, loving on other women, supporting other women. I mean, there was a richness. And these are women that looked like me who were doing the dang thing. So it was really, really, it was just wonderful. And it was fun.
Yeah.
I mean, there were hugs and, you know, it was just good. I think to be in that environment. But it was the sisterhood that stood out to me.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. So you go through Spelman College. You have this double major. Uh-huh. And then after that, did you know then, okay, now it's time for me to figure out where I'm taking this?
So, I mean, it's a very, very long story. I did not know then because I left Spelman and went to medical school. And so that's a whole different story. But I initially thought, I'm going to be a psychiatrist or an OBGYN. So I took a different path. So I went to Illinois first after Spelman. Again, knowing I wanted to be a doctor, but not really knowing exactly what kind of doctor I wanted to be yet. So, I mean, a lot of this was me trying to figure out life. I am the first person in my family to go to college.
Period.
And so, period. And then I am so proud of the fact that my younger sister and my cousins, younger cousins have all gone, since then. Mm-hmm. But I really figured out a lot on my own, and I had a huge supportive family, of course. But I kind of figured a lot on my own. I was like, okay, I'm going to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't thinking about, being a psychologist or being, an educator.
You were thinking just medically.
I was thinking, if I'm being honest, I was actually thinking medical doctor. Mm-hmm. And I think the whole time I was meant to do what I'm doing now. I think it took me a longer avenue to get there because I was trying out other, other avenues.
Yeah. But how long did you stay in med school?
For 2 years.
Okay.
For 2 years there.
So after that, then you're like, okay, so because 2 years is not complete when it comes to med school. What happened? Did you just get all that knowledge and then what?
No. So what I did was I got a full scholarship to go there as well, which is why I went, because I'm a Georgia girl.
Emory.
Yes. Well, I went to Illinois first and then I came back to Emory. So the way that I worked that was I got a full scholarship. So I needed to go somewhere after Spelman.
Okay.
And so I full scholarship to go to Southern Illinois. So I was there and I took a leave of absence. And the way that everything was really lined for me, Spelman was my first choice. Emory has always been my second choice.
Okay.
And so I made a connection over at the School of Public Health at Emory, and I knew if I got into the School of Public Health, so I have a master's in public health as well. If I got into that school, then I can get into their PhD program. So I really made a lot of connections and formed a lot of relationships to get into my programs. But I earned it. I want to be very, very clear. I worked my butt off.
Okay.
But I left Illinois and came to Emory to get into their School of Public Health.
Okay.
And while there, I realized that Emory only takes about 5 people into their PhD program a year. And I was like, whew, all right, what do I have to do to get into this program? And so I started doing some research. I did a lot of research on maternal fetal medicine. And so I started working my way into this program and being in that environment. And the rest is history.
Yeah, what do you think was the determining factor for you getting in?
You saying outside of my intellect? But no, seriously, I worked my butt off.
Yeah.
And they don't play games there. They do not play games. It's like, look, you know what? Our minority numbers are okay.
Right.
Like, seriously.
We don't really need in that number.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
so we need to be really good.
Absolutely. We have some others. And and that's why I tried to make sure I was well-rounded. I was like, you need somebody who, can speak another language. I can a little bit.
Okay.
You need someone who does great volunteer work. I do that too. So I was just like, look, you may find somebody that's that's better than me in one area, but in all of these areas,
yeah.
So I was
set yourself apart.
I was ready. Yeah. I was really ready. Yeah. I was determined. I was determined.
What did you do your thesis on?
The effects of maternal psychopathology, so stress, anxiety, and depression on the fetus. And so I worked with over 200 pregnant moms who were experiencing some type of psychopathology, and I followed them throughout their pregnancy and at delivery to see the effects on the fetus and on birth immediately after.
Okay, first, I have two. Psychopathology, what exactly is that?
Stress, anxiety, and depression.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what did you find?
So moms who were stressed and anxious, their babies were, so either way, babies were either stressed and anxious, so moved a whole lot. So I monitored fetal movement, I monitored fetal heart rate. And so if you're stressed and anxious, your baby's stressed and anxious.
Yes.
And so in terms of moving, also babies who, moms who were depressed, their babies moved less. Mm. And moms who were really, really stressed out, I found that their babies habituated, and that basically means they stopped responding. I looked at it as conserving energy, so they stopped responding to certain stimuli. So it's like, oh my gosh, something stressful is going on. I need to be as calm and as reserved as possible. Yeah. So these babies, basically, they felt the stress, they felt the anxiety, they felt the depression. And it was just like, oh, wow, it's not safe out there. These babies definitely were born underneath gestational weight, and they were born early, like premature. So moms experience contractions
early on
and much more frequent than moms who were not yet.
So from that study, and then where do you go after that? Like, where do you take this type of information?
I published it, and I wrote some book chapters. And I also created some interventions for moms who are stressed, anxious, and depressed. And so we do, because during pregnancy, you can't, take a number of different medications. And there are a lot of moms who don't want to be on medications anyway.
At all, yeah.
And so developing interventions such as mindfulness interventions, teaching some CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, for these moms. And so they can say, it's okay to be stressed,
yeah,
but it's like, what do we do with that, to know that they have a sense of agency and they have some power?
Man, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. I'm sure people were very thankful for your articles and the information that you were able to get from that.
Yeah, it was really, really great. And just working with the moms and giving them some power.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I know what you're going through. I feel you, but we got to do something because your baby's being impacted. Mm-hmm, so, yeah.
So from there, where do you go after you finish your thesis? You get your doctor.
So I've been in school for, I was in school for like 11, 12 years.
Yeah,
so yeah,
yeah.
So you finish, we have to do, of course, there's an internship and there's a postdoc. And so I stayed at Emory and I did a trauma postdoc. And so I worked at Grady for maybe two to three years.
Yeah.
And so I worked with women. So women, I love women's health. And so I worked with women who had experienced some type of trauma, and it could be rape, it could be robbery, it could just be, childhood abuse. And so I work with these women and help them to kind of get their life back. I also work with veterans. So I did a lot of trauma work for a couple of years once I finished.
What did you, and people have so many sometimes bad things to say about Grady, but
yeah.
Such an amazing learning ground for you, right?
Yeah. Grady is wonderful all around, not only as a place of learning and a place of healing. I just think the patients too and the doctors there, it is a place like no other. And so I am happy if something happens to me to take me to Grady. Take me to Grady. I love the patients there. It took me a long time to leave Grady and to leave because I'm in private practice now. It took me a while. And it was because I knew I would miss my patients.
Yeah.
And I still miss them. And I whenever I go there for a meeting, I kind of look around to see if I know anybody.
Yeah.
There's something very, very special about that place.
Yeah.
And I was honored to train there, and I was honored to treat the people that I treated there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. So now you're in private practice.
Ooh, yeah.
And you get to help people. You get to be used as a vessel.
Yeah.
Every single day.
What's
a typical day like for you?
It varies day to day.
Yeah.
So I teach on Mondays, which is I call it like my off day. I think that I'm in practice Tuesday through Friday and occasionally on a Saturday. But I think because I am seeing patients every day, all day, it is important for me to have a day where I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And so I teach a class, and even though I'm still like interacting and teaching and being used and serving, it's a different type of serving.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so my days are very full.
Yeah.
I work out in the mornings, and so I don't start early. So if anyone ever needs he's like a 9 o'clock day. I'm like, yeah, I'm not really a 9 o'clock, but I got you.
So you're not a morning person.
Well, I'm up. Right. I am up. I am a night owl, so I don't go to bed until like 2.
Okay.
And then I'm up early to work out, so I can't see someone at 8 o'clock because I'm getting up at like, you know, 7 or whatever.
Right. Right. Gotcha.
But I'm seeing people from, you know, 10 o'clock, I would say 9 or 10, and I see my last person around 7 o'clock. So yeah. I have very, very long days.
I'm glad that, you know, you're here and we get to talk about therapy. I have said and been very candid and open on this podcast about how I've sat down with a counselor. Yeah. I've worked with my chapter on our in our mental illness awareness activation that we do. Are we still, as a culture, as Black people, do we still look at therapy and seeing someone like you as a bad thing? Or do you think we are turning the corner?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
We still see it as a there's still this huge stigma that exists surrounding therapy, but we are turning and we're turning slowly.
Okay.
And I tell everyone that I see, like, for especially for those who are just super duper confident and they're out there, I'm like, if you're loving your experience, if you feel like you're growing, you know, to not be afraid to tell someone, just like you did, like I go to see a therapist or I have a psychologist, just to let them know that you don't have to be crazy, broke, busted, and disgusted or whatever in order to go see a therapist. I see some amazing women, some amazing men, some amazing couples in therapy. And not all of them have something, quote unquote, you know, wrong with them. Some people are just trying to get better. And some people just need an outlet to be able to kind of be authentically you, to say, hey, this is what I'm wrestling with. I need another person to kind of help me sort this out.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we see those who are, of course, you know, dealing with some really severe things. But then we see others who are just like, you know what? I'm just trying to be great.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm trying to be great.
So for those who may just have anxiety or something like that. What would a typical session be like for you? Like, how do you get people to unravel? Let's start with something as minor as, I can't say it's minor because everybody's level of anxiety is different, but what's a typical session like for
you? So it depends. Yeah, of course it depends on the level of anxiety, but everybody's first session is just where I'm trying to build some rapport with them. It is tough to come and it's tough to come and sit in front of someone and to tell them the things that you struggle with, especially something like anxiety. I mean, imagine being afraid of, you know, elevators or being afraid of public speaking. That it's, you know, that stuff that we cover up really, really well. The stuff that bothers us, we cover it up really, really well. So it's really kind of opening, getting them to open up and getting them to trust me first. So it's the first session. And then after that, I do a lot of various treatments based on the person who's in front of me. In terms of biofeedback, cognitive behavioral therapy for the reduction of anxiety. And so I deal a lot with your thoughts because I feel like, you know, how we,
those thoughts, they are real.
Absolutely. I teach, one of the things I teach most of the people I see in session number one or session number two or three is the power of your thoughts. And I tell everyone, you know, this may sound really quacky in the beginning, but I talk about how what you think impacts what you feel and then what you feel impacts what you do. And so if you think, oh my gosh, I'm going to get on this stage and stutter, if that's your first thought, then how do you expect to feel after that? And then if you feel all worked up, you feel all anxious, what do you expect your behavior to be when you get up there? You know, you're going to shut down. You're going to stumble over your words. And so I try and get them to change. We call it retraining the brain, to retrain your brain first so that everything else can follow.
Yeah.
It's a domino effect.
So you basically are saying, Rashawn, you are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tell yourself that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And to know that it is okay to speak it aloud.
Yes, it
is. Yeah, in the car, like, I'm about to rock this. This is great. I am honored to be here. I'm amazing. I'm so happy that I'm about to share some information with, you know, this audience. So you have to speak life into yourself. And you walk on that stage because you feel confident now. You feel honored now. You feel proud. You feel capable. And you walk on that stage and you rock it. And it is not by accident.
Yeah.
It is not by accident.
I think that I mean, a lot of us have just really, because we downplayed so many things the wrong way in our minds,
and
it truly can manifest that way.
Oh, absolutely.
All the time.
Yeah. The way that you program it is what you're going to get out. You know, it's a programming type thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, So we try and do reprogramming in therapy.
Reprogramming.
In every single area in terms of how we think, how we act, what we do, how we respond. It's a reprogramming in a safe place.
In a safe place.
Yeah.
And you've talked a few. You mentioned couples therapy, and you see a lot of couples.
Yeah.
Is there ever a time when, and I'm sure you've probably experienced this, where they just don't want to take your advice, one spouse or the other. Yeah. And then you have to say, you know what? I don't think this is working for us.
Yeah, a lot. I do get a handful of couples who are, I would say, you know, you definitely get like 50, 60% where they are, both couples are happy to, both partners are happy to be there.
Yeah.
But then you'll get one where, you know, the wife has said, if we don't get some therapy, then, you know, I'm done, or vice versa. So I do get some who feel like they know it best. And I'm really, really authentic and really honest. I'm genuine and gentle, but very honest. And yeah. I tell them, you're going to have to, at some point, you're going to have to trust me. Because if you could have, if you could have done it, you would have already done it by now. And apparently your way has not worked. So let's try, just for a couple of sessions, let's try doing it this way.
Yeah.
And then seeing what happens. And normally once they say like, okay, I'm like, you don't have to, and you can challenge me. It's a journey. We're on this journey together. Mm-hmm. And so we can really kind of tweak this to make it work for you. But at some point you're going to have to say, okay, you know what do I need to do? Because there's no manual for this. Like, no one teaches us how to be a great wife or a great husband. Yeah. And I think that's what it is. When they come into sessions, I just say, you know, no one knows, you know, we mimic our parents and, you know, not everybody had wonderful parents.
Right.
And so just teaching them that we are relearning how to love each other, mm-hmm. is great. So I have great couples.
So you anxiety, obviously couples therapy, but you do the whole thing. Do you work with people with bipolar?
Absolutely. So I'm a clinical psychologist.
Can you break down the difference between like, I mean, I don't know all the differences.
So there, I mean, and we have some of the same training, you know, all across the board, some of the same training, but a lot of my work has been in diagnosing and the treatment of mental disorders.
Got you.
So, you know, anxiety, depression, bipolar, borderline, schizophrenia, you know, a number of different, like antisocial, mm-hmm. Autism, Asperger's. So a number of severe, you know, disorders I see in session.
Yeah. Do you, when you have to diagnose to maybe a parent whose mm-hmm. child may have Asperger's or autism, like, how are you able to then help them first before you help the child?
Yeah, so we start off with, because, you know, I understand that it's so frightening for parents too. A lot of parents don't want a diagnosis. And if we are honest, you know, we can talk about what is going on with your child. Insurance companies need diagnoses. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, as long as you realize that these are the symptoms that your child has, and this is what it looks like, you know, if you don't want to use a label, that's totally okay. We're going to call it what it is. And you can decide once you leave from here to use it or not to use it. But to help them to kind of come to grips with, this is what's going on with my child and whatever comes along with that. Because a lot of parents feel a sense of guilt.
Yes.
And of course, a sense of sadness, a sense of loss, you know, so helping them to kind of wrap their head around this. A lot of psychoeducation goes into that, where, okay, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. So you're saying my child is autistic, or you're saying my child has, you know, bipolar or borderline. So what comes along with that? So once the parents are taken care of, then we can go and, you know, bring the kids into it. So I work with the entire families in that situation.
Yeah. I do want to touch a little bit on children and mental health. I mean, mm-hmm. we just talked about autism and Asperger's, but just to flip on that same playing field, what is it as a parent? I have a 10-year-old daughter who is, you know, her emotions are changing and all mm-hmm. that. What do I need to be aware of? Like, just for maybe things that may be changing, if she's going through some type of depression, what are some of the symptoms that parents need to look out for?
Yeah, we're looking at behaviors that are outside of the norm for that situation. So of course, if she, you know, if her friend moves away and she cries and she's sad, then that's an appropriate reaction to a loss. Mm-hmm. If she's sad and she's crying and it's lasting for 2 weeks or more, that's a little bit different. Of course, if, you know, she's getting ready to go on stage and she's a little bit nervous, that's normal. She's getting ready to do her Christmas play at school. That's normal. If she's shaking backstage and she, you know, she really can't go on stage and she's crying, that's a little bit outside of the norm. And mm-hmm. so those things that are disproportionate to the situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Now, you have a great Instagram social media following.
Yeah.
Ask Dr. Joy.
Uh-huh.
So what are some of the questions you get on there?
You know, so I'm not huge. I'm not huge into social media because it takes work for me. And I feel like I'm working so much. That came about based on a radio show that I do, mm-hmm. where callers get to call in to ask me their dilemmas. And so someone kind of said, you know, what's your social media handle? And I was like, I don't have a handle. and so normally the questions come from on air,
okay.
but I'll get some DMs from time to time, and they are, you know, my a lot of couple, a lot of relationships. Yeah. My boyfriend is doing this. My husband won't go to therapy. I've been experiencing anxiety, a lot of stress surrounding jobs and what to do and finding one's purpose. So they vary from A to Z.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. But a lot of great, great questions.
Good. Yeah. So I know that you said some of the things that you definitely wanted to talk about is just that self-discovery. Like if we could have a small, I guess, session for our listeners, what would that self-discovery, the beginning of self-discovery, look like?
I think sitting down, I think we all need time to ourselves. And I think we are so busy being for everybody else and doing for everybody else. So I think a still moment of just being still, like, you know what, how are you feeling? You know, what's, you know, kind of what comes to mind? We talk about meditation, the power of meditation. I think it's just really being still for a second and really shutting off your cell phone, shutting off social media and sitting with yourself and saying, you know what brings me joy? Mm-hmm. What are my fears? What are my desires? And so really sitting and having an honest conversation with yourself and those things that bring you joy is like, how can I do more of that?
Yeah.
Those things that are kind of hindering you from going forward, those things that kind of stay on your mind, those things that you're still holding on to or need to forgive someone else of, it's really sitting with all those things and being very, very honest with yourself about what brings you joy and what brings you pain.
Yeah.
And then to realize how those things may come up in other situations. So it's being still for a moment and being like, you know, man, who am I?
Yeah.
What do I like? What do I dislike? You know, how do I show up in situations and why do I show up that way in situations?
Yeah. Do you do that for yourself?
Oh man, every single day, probably too much sometimes, but yeah, every single day I want to be my best self and I know I'm not perfect. I want to be my best self. So I do sit and I regroup on a regular basis. I wake up every morning. I have a ritual in terms of gratitude and affirmations. And then my prayer. But I do. I sit with myself and I'm like, what's wrong with you? Like, what are you feeling?
Yeah.
You know, what's heavy on you?
What's your vibration like today?
What's my vibration like? Am I aligned? Yeah. Yeah. And I figure out how do I need to get it. I want to shine wherever I go, just in terms of being light.
Yeah.
So yeah. So I work on it.
Driving versus thriving.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? What does that mean to you?
I tell a lot of people that I think we know how to survive in life, but we don't know how to like thrive and live. Like, we know we get through day to day so much. It's like, am I really living? And so that's one of the things I like to help people do, to live life, you know, to make sure that you know that, you know, this is, you're in control of your life. You can create the type of life that you want and it can be an amazing, amazing life. Like, no matter where you came from, no matter what you were dealing with, that you don't have to just go through life.
Yeah.
It's a sense of agency. I can really, really thrive in life.
So, yeah. And that still goes back to the thinking, the thought about who you are and and how you're going
to
show up.
Oh yeah. And to definitely validate experiences, because we've all been through so many things, and to just say, it's okay. That is okay. And to really heal from those experiences and then to say, okay, what are we going to do now?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you not, as a doctor, like, how do you not internalize things that when you are helping someone who has been through something so traumatic, how do you as a human, not the doctor, as a human, how do you keep it all together?
Tons of self-care. And so I feel, and I am very honest, and I think, you know, over the years, of course, you know, it still impacts me. I still feel, my heartstrings are pulled. I still feel very sad after some sessions, but I think it's not like the typical reaction. I don't know what that is. I'm going to call it a gift and a skill because I still feel, but I don't leave crying, you know, after a session and just like boohooing. Mm-hmm. But lots and lots of self-care. I give myself time after the end of my day to decompress because it is heavy.
Yeah.
And if I'm spending, you know, 8 hours seeing, you know, patients all day, imagine what you've seen within that 8 hours and the stories that you've heard within those 8 hours. And so the mental capacity that it takes, I recharge after work and then definitely on the weekends. Like, I love to sleep. I love to read. I love massages, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
I am a strong advocate of self-care.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that you love to read and you're currently reading The Gift of Receiving
so that you can receive some of that love
that you're giving. Mm-hmm. How come it's been so hard for you to receive?
Oh gosh. I think because I'm such a giver and I love helping others. And so, you know, I think it just catches me off guard sometimes when someone's like, let me do for you. And I want nothing in return. I'm like, wow, really?
Yeah.
That's like new. I'm giving so much. And so I'm allowing myself to sit with it. You know, when patients say thank you, or that was life changing, or when someone, you know, offers a compliment or whatever, I'm just allowing myself to sit with it, to pause and to just honor that. And I'm also reading the Present Not Perfect. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading it because I did some research and referred it to a patient of mine, but teaching us how to be more present day to day. And that's why when we were talking about scheduling, I was like, no, let me work it out, because I want to be present. I want to be able to show up without any conflicting things. And so really creating more moments where I think life is giving me so much and it's putting so much in front of me, and I want to show up for it.
Yeah.
I want to show up for
it. You got to show up.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. So that's my goal.
Well, you showed up in 2004 and you became a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. Did Alpha Kappa Alpha choose you, or did you choose Alpha Kappa Alpha?
Oh my. All right. How many followers do you have? Let me think about this answer.
No. Give us your truth.
Yes, yes. My truth is they chose me.
Okay.
And it was an honor to be chosen. I can say that I've always wanted to be a woman of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. Yes. Growing up in my town, I saw these women. I saw the works that they were doing. And this was, you know, further manifested in college. And so I've always wanted to be that woman. And so to be chosen and selected as a member was an honor for me. Yes. So yeah, I was chosen.
Yes, number nine. That was at Kappa Gamma Omega. Where is that?
When I went to Illinois.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Southern Illinois. Awesome, yeah. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Now you're a member of Epsilon Alpha Omega. So awesome.
Thank you so
good
much.
Stuff. Good stuff. Look at that smile on your face. That smile
good
on
stuff.
Your face.
Thank you so much, Rashawn.
You're so welcome. So what is your definition of cool?
Ooh, what's my definition of cool? Mm-hmm. I think self-awareness is cool.
Yeah.
I think courage is cool. I think loving and helping others is cool.
Yeah.
I think you're cool, Rashawn.
Thank you. I mean, you know, I try to be.
Absolutely.
I try to be.
I feel it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Before we let you go, I mean, you've accomplished so much. And you also write for O Magazine.
I do.
How is that? How did you even get hooked up with Mama O?
And you know, so I don't know Mama O like that. I like to think she's my mama, you know,
right.
From the
this, for her magazine.
This is my mama's magazine.
Right.
So I do a lot of work. I like to say I put the real in reality TV. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of work for a lot of networks that broadcast a lot of reality shows. And so the OWN network happens to be one of those networks. And so it was all about relationships. Someone's like, oh my gosh, you'd be really good. I started writing for women's health and writing about health, wellness, and the power of kind of taking care of yourself mentally. And based on a person there who said, oh my gosh, you'd be really good at writing a column about therapy and psychology and the mind and positive thinking for O Magazine. Are you interested? I'm like, would I be interested? Man, when do you need this article? Right. I can have that to you today.
Right.
So it was all about a relationship, and someone came after me based on some other work.
How
that
long
I had
have
done.
You been doing that?
This is my third year.
Okay. And mm-hmm. so do you do it is it monthly for every issue?
They'll kind of let us know, like they're seeking articles for A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. And so I'm writing regularly because I'm writing for a couple of different magazines. So whether it's O Magazine or Women's Health Magazine, and I did some work for Dr. Oz's magazine. Okay. So it's just based on what they're seeking.
You're a superstar psychologist.
Ooh. Okay. All right. You said it. I didn't.
Yeah.
Thank you. I received that.
You received
How about
that?
That?
You
I receive it.
Receive
I receive
the blessing
it.
And
I
the compliment.
Receive that. Thank you.
Where do you want to go with all of this? Because you do so much, and you know.
Yeah.
What's your end all be all to all of this?
You know, I'm still working on that.
And it's okay. And
I'm totally still working on it. It's all along the path of helping others to be their best selves.
Yeah.
So whether I am teaching a class, hosting a workshop, or seeing individuals in therapy, or writing an article, it's all to help people to live in their truth, to live authentically, and to be their best self.
Yeah.
So wherever that takes me, I'll be honored to be there.
Yeah. So when you do teach, you teach on Mondays at Spelman.
Yeah.
What's that been like? How long have you been teaching at Spelman?
Oh my gosh, man, like forever.
Really?
2010 maybe? I don't
know.
I've been there for a very long time, but I only teach on Mondays because the rest of the day is for the practice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love it. I'm a product of Spelman. I love my girls at Spelman. It's fun. And I want them to see me. I want them to see, you know, I told them, I said, you know, I went to Spelman and I enjoyed Spelman. And I tell them to live on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so to start early thinking about what is it that you want to do and to start walking in that. I'm like, have fun, go to parties, pledge, do whatever you have to do.
Yeah.
But make sure you're always living on purpose. And so I love it. I'm tough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tough.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That little soft voice. You're tough.
Oh, you better ask them. They'll tell you don't. Yeah.
You expect a lot, I'm sure.
You know, I do. And I save their emails after the semester. And they know it because, you know, the first day of class, I always say, what have you heard? And they'll say, we heard that you don't take any stuff.
Right.
But I get emails and it never fails where kids or students are saying, you know, you're one of my favorite teachers. You pushed me. You expected a lot because, you know, we talk about the Spelman gates. And I tell them that Spelman is not your competition. Mm-hmm. I know what it felt like for me to be at Emory and for my classmates to come from Yale, from Princeton, from Brown. And so I'm like, that is not your competition. You are your competition to really, really be your best self. So I encourage them to be more cooperative than competitive and to kind of think outside of those Spelman gates so that they're competitive wherever they go.
Yeah.
So I'm tough on them, but oh, it's all love and they know it. And they reach it, Rashawn.
Yes.
They reach the bar. And that's the thing. I set these high expectations and I rarely have a student that doesn't reach it.
So that has to bring you so much joy to actually teach at your alma mater and
see. Oh my gosh.
The fruits of the labor. Like, ooh, just yes. Look at that.
It
you
does.
Smile.
Yeah, it does. It warms my heart. I love those girls.
Yeah.
I love every single one of them. And I need them to know that somebody cares. Somebody's pushing them. Somebody wants them to be great. And if I can help them to get there, that brings me so much joy. But I love them. I love how they come in and when they leave and just seeing them. It does a whole lot. It makes me feel old, but it does a whole lot for me.
So, when's your next conference? Are you already, you just finished one, but when's your next one? Are you
I'm not planning a conference. I am planning a couples retreat.
And
so I don't have a date because I'm working on it because we're trying to, we're going to Asheville. We're thinking about Asheville and we are working
on it. That's a nice place. I heard it's beautiful there.
Oh my gosh. And so I have a trip planned there to look at a cabin because we want to make it where it encompasses, you know, eating and, you know, some physical activity, some hiking. So we're working on it now, but I want to get, you know, like 10 couples, and to really take them there and to really do some good work for a couple of days. So that's what
awesome.
I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who's the lucky man that married you?
Ooh, my boo, my honey bunch.
Yes.
Yeah. My husband's name is Deshaun.
Hey Deshaun. Look at that smile. How long have you been married?
He's so awesome. So we've been together for 7 years. We've been married for 2.5.
Love it.
So he is absolutely wonderful. He's at work.
Okay.
So I always say I am because he is.
Mm-hmm.
So I can do all of this and I can put energy into all the things I put energy in because he is. Yeah. He's my covering. Yeah. He is my rock. So
I love it.
Yeah. He's awesome.
That's a beautiful mm-hmm. thing. That's a beautiful thing. How can people find you? I know you are on social media and then you have to talk about your radio show, like everything, everywhere people can find you.
Yeah. I am. My Instagram is ask. That's ASKDRJOY. So ask Dr. Joy.
Yes.
My website is drjoytotheworld.com. I typically say I'm, you know, to the world, I'm Dr. Joy, but to everybody else, I'm just Joy. And then on Tuesday nights at 9:00, I am on Praise 102.5.
Oh, yeah. With Darlene? Yeah,
with Darlene.
Yes. Awesome.
Yeah, so we take calls. And so I do What's Your Dilemma with Dr. Joy every Tuesday at 9:00. So from 9 to 10.
You are doing it.
I'm doing it.
I'm so blessed to have you on the show.
I am blessed to be here.
The superstar psychologist.
Oh, stop it. I'm receiving it.
Thank you.
I'm receiving it. The book is helping already. I'm not even done.
Good.
So, yeah.
Awesome.
So, Rashawn, thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been fabulous.
Yes.
And hopefully we get to do more of these when you have your couples retreat and you want to get the word out.
Absolutely.
Please come back and we'll have you back on.
I will. I will take you up on that.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm here. I'm here to serve.
But yay!
As you are.
Yes. Thank you. Sisters in service.
Sisters in service.
Yes.
That's right. Dr. Joy Beckwith, everybody.
My name is Dr. Joy Beckwith, and I'm a clinical psychologist and the founder of KFOR of Atlanta, and I'm a cool soror of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.